accession number 23100, reel 9.
Yes, you were saying sent...
He had to dry out in Cyprus. They went off for a month. He was dry out, apparently. So he must have been... I did mention yesterday that on one occasion, Martin told me at a lunch somewhere in London, must have been in the 43 or 44, it was an official lunch for some reason or other, and John Center was at the head of the table, and suddenly they'd been drinking. He suddenly banged the table and said, "We must have more scramblers. We must have more." I had a scrambler in Valera, of course. No, I had no telephone in Valera at all when I went there. I rigged up a field line from the house to the station master. And London used his telephone to say, "Get Fife to phone." And he would ring up on the line, and I would go down and ring London. But then I did get a telephone, a post office line, and then of course I got a scrambler. So I was one of the few scramblers in SME in Scotland. But no, this question of John Center was apparently a black mark when he banged the table and shouted, "We must have more scramblers." And it was Martin who told me when he came up to Edinburgh. And then I'd never seen evidence of drink with John at all. We had a couple of gins in the club, and a couple of gins at Buckingham Palace Mansions, a glass of wine, and they would send me off with a dram. I used to walk back. In those days I lived in the Mascot Hotel in York Place off Baker Street. And I used to walk from his flat home, and I got a dram before I left.
Was there a lot of drinking within Baker Street?
No, there was. Was it the Swindler's Arms? There was a pub nearby where people tended to congregate, but we didn't drink. We had a couple of glasses, and that was more or less it. And we had... Roach was rather pernickety about wines and pernickety about port. And I had lunch occasionally in his flat with perhaps the LAF chap, Cecil Roach was his forebear. Lots of memoria. Anyhow, we had lunch there occasionally, and Roach was always very fastidious about his wine had to be absolutely properly temperatured, and his port had to be properly dealt with too. And, John tended to drink pink gins.
Navy man, I suppose.
Yes. He introduced pink gin to Inverness on one occasion. And we met up in the station hotel, and we were overnighting there, and we sat drinking pink gins in the bar. But no, there was no evidence of drinking in the nasty sense of that word. They tended to meet, have a drink, and then we all went our separate ways. And that was that.
Did you have much to do with Dickie Warden?
Dickie?
Warden.
R.H. Warden. Mm. Yes. The racehorse trainer.
Was he?
Mm-hmm. He was a FSNCO and commissioned from the section, and then of course he became BSS1 and ran BSS1, I knew him as BSS1, and then of course after IMFI I was appointed BSS2, but then Dickie Warden disappeared. Not quite sure where he went, but within a couple of weeks or so he had given up, and I was left to be BSS1 with Dorothy Scoyles to hold my hand. And this was at the tail end, of course, and I'm not shown as having done any great number of interrogations, But others did. Dickie Warden did, I think, 40 or 50 interrogations.
I get the impression that BSS were the troubleshooters for security problems. Is that, would I be correct in that?
I don't know that I could say entirely. They did form more closely together with C, latterly. But I was never really immersed in BSS because immediately after I had taken over from Warden, I had 2 or 3 weeks after that, the idea of this evaluation mission cropped up. And I was hauled back to sort out this evaluation business, set up a card index of agents and all the rest of it, and then liaise with Mansug, this brigadier from somewhere or other, either an 8th Army or some other army region, I don't know, but he was awkward and impossible. He didn't settle into X section at all, didn't understand it. And he didn't last all that long, and Templar came along, of course.
We haven't really, for the record, tackled your EMFI job. How did that come about?
Out of the blue. Just out of the blue. John Center, Archie wants you to... was setting up an integrated headquarters, British, French and American forces, and we're going to take over the headquarters in London. Do you know Sir Abe Bailey's house? I didn't know Sir Abe Bailey's house. I knew who he was. Well, we're taking over his house, Bryanston Square. It's to be an integrated headquarters, and security is absolutely essential. Can't leave it to the bloody French, because they won't know what to do with it. Wouldn't trust the Americans, and so we're going to deal with security, and you're going to set it up. You'll have to drop a set of security regulations in French. You'll have to case the joint, and look to all the exits and entrances, and put in general security regulations in operation. You'll be seconded to General de Gaulle. And I said, sorry, John, sorry at that. I couldn't work under the shadow of General de Gaulle. And I expressed myself quite freely. I didn't like the man. I didn't trust him. Well, he said, I said, that torpedoes the whole thing. I said, well, I'm sorry, but I'll torpedo it if I work with de Gaulle, or if I have to work with de Gaulle.
Why was it that you had taken such an aversion to him?
I didn't trust the man. I never did trust the man. So somebody said, is he l'ordre, c'est moi le général de Gaulle qui vous parle? He was only bloody lieutenant colonel, but is he moi le général de Gaulle qui vous parle? I just disliked the man from the start. His bombastic way of running around the corridors. You heard them long before you saw him because his feet clattered on the floor, he had muckle feet, and then his nose came round the corner first. I just didn't like him, and I didn't trust some of the things he'd done, and I didn't trust his setup at all. I couldn't. Anyhow, I expressed myself and said, no, I'm sorry. And have I had experience of some of the other section heads and government heads too? The Commandant Muller of the Belgian lot, he was a delightful character. And of course I was involved with the Norwegians as well. And I just felt, oh, de Gaulle's beneath my notice. And then it was that they said, Marie-Pierre Koenig. And he was a different, I knew of him, had a great respect for what he had done. And I said, yes, so there's a letter somewhere there of thanks from Marie-Pierre Koenig for my services, EMFI. And I settled myself in EMFI, sat down to draw up a constitution for it, sat down to draw up regulations for it, all in French, of course, I had to be, and then settled myself in an office, and I issued all the passes. And checked all the chitties that came in later on, because they didn't understand security.
I mean, I would imagine if you have you had SOE as the British side of things, you had OSS for the American, would it be?
No, we were, OSS wasn't involved in EMFI. Haskell was involved in EMFI on the American side, representing the American forces. But OSS was not represented in EMFI.
And was it the BCRA for the French? No.
There was only Marie-Pierre Koenig, who probably incorporated BCRA, of course, but they weren't specifically represented. It was Marie-Pierre Koenig with his second-in-command, Admiral Vernon, who was a very easy man to deal with, pleasant character.
Was this the first time you had much to do with the Americans?
Yeah, well, I had an American lieutenant seconded to me when I was with SOE, when I was with the DCE. But I found that he opened his mouth too wide, and he went to places he shouldn't have gone to, despite having been told that's company territory. And I sent him back to his unit after 3 weeks.
How did you get on with the Americans?
I got on with this other chap, Waters, very well indeed. He was my attachment from the Americans. I got on quite well. I found them later on in Germany. I had a lot to do with them because I was constantly in the American zone. And I found them, sometimes they were awfully difficult, administratively difficult. If I wanted movement orders, well, it'll take 36 hours to cut that. I was in the point of saying, hell, give me a typewriter and cut the bloody thing myself. No. But they were difficult, destructive sometimes. Wiesbaden was awkward. And of course, I dealt with Frank Canfield. He was one of our London contacts, Frank Canfield, through OSS. And he was quite helpful. But the French I found quite helpful too. More helpful than the Americans, except in the case of that Major Ilsley, who was the man who gave us entree to Mauthausen and its records. He was very helpful and gave us those four ex-inmates to help us plough through the thousands of names.
You said that the French and the Americans didn't always have a very good sense of security. Were there any particular manifestations of that in MV as to how they had?
I came in one morning, half past eight, to Bryanston Square, and I found the square littered with BBC recording vans. I'd heard nothing about this. BBC recording vans, cables all over the place, into the building, and hordes of unknown bods. Civilian clothes running. I said, who the hell are you? Oh, we're from London BBC. And who brought you in here? Oh, we're here officially. And I found that Haskell, down in the basement where he was, beautifully pillared basement, marble pillars holding up the main floor, was pinning medals on free French soldiers for American television. An American recording.
And he hadn't notified us?
No, not a bit. And I had words with him afterwards. I said, look, sir, I'm in charge of security. I should know who's coming into and going out of this building. It's laid down. Nobody gets in without a pass. Who gives these passes? They don't need passes. I said, everybody needs a pass. You need a pass. No, Haskell, I told you, I knew about Haskell through the St. Waters. I knew his brother George, who became a student in St. Andrews. And Haskell was just a playboy. He'd never done anything at West Point, he'd gained nothing, but they were friends of the White House. So. And George became a one-star general, but that was merit. Now, I told you how he was totally punctured when Waters said, I was to the Guadalcanal campaign, sir, from start to finish.
This is an officer of his whom he hadn't bothered to trouble himself to meet.
He wouldn't have got past that whack. And she only admitted generals.
But she admitted five.
Well, she admitted 500 duress.
So as the MV business was it coming to a conclusion?
It came to a conclusion in a minute. Paris was taken. That was the end. There was no more need praying for you. I mean, this is de Gaulle, I think, who just said, out! I am now in my beloved city, and these buggers can go sink or swim. And the whole show just disappeared almost immediately. I think it was.
And when EMFI is shut down, was it Boyle or Centre who then started, who found another task for you?
Well, it was Centre who sent me to Bayswater. Thought I could do a job there. To Dickie Warden. And then Dickie Warden got this other appointment somewhere or other, and I was left like Carney holding the baby.
And your work at Bayswater then was?
Well, simply to interview agents. But we had a big interviewing staff, a big interrogation staff, who were experts at it. And I was really, I was just a jumped up lunch corporal as far as that was concerned. So I did, I think there's three interviews altogether. And the interesting one was that chap, von der Heidt, who had been dropped near Pforzheim, was a man called Weber. And they were to derail rail transport in Pforzheim. And they dropped outside the city and did their job, separated. Von der Heidt came back, turned up in Bayswater, and he wrote out his story, first of all, and it was beautifully done. It was done in detail. He drew maps, and then we interviewed him, Dorothy and I, and he had this map, and I said, now I want you to tell me exactly what's on this map. Ah, so, da Vereinbach, here Vereinbach. And he went through the whole thing on the floor, exactly as he detailed on the map, and he said, here he buried his parachute, near that little stream coming in there. And then he said, they sort of disguised themselves, and he said, Weber made a mütze. Weber felt he made a cap of some kind, and Dorothy Scholes jumped on this, and she wrote a wee poem. The last line in which every verse was, Weber made a mütze. But he gave an ideally detailed report of their whole mission, including the derailing of those trains and then their escape into the wilds. And Weber, he didn't quite know where Weber was, but he'd got back. And when I did go to Germany, I went down to Pforzheim, and I went out with the intention of finding just exactly where Hier Vereinbach und da Vereinbach, but I couldn't find the parachute, although I tracked the steam down. But it was perfectly true. He brought a beautiful detailed picture back of what had happened and where, and it was all there on the ground, physically on the ground.
So the interrogation is really to check up on the veracity of the...
Yes, to check up on... pick holes in what they said, if you could. But you couldn't always pick holes.
So they would presumably, returning agents would have been interrogated by their country section, but then also by the security section.
Yes, they were doubly interrogated by BSS. And our boys were skilled. I mean, I wasn't skilled, I just still had this thing on my sleeve. But I tried to control the place as far as it was necessary to control it. But then, of course, I was then whistled away to evaluate.
And that order, order, instruction for you to carry out the evaluation, did that come from Centre or from Boyle?
That came from Archie Boyle, with John Centre present, but it was Archie's insistence. And Archie was the one who had plans for post-war continuation of the evaluation section, which was torpedoed by Sporborg and Dibley, with Vera hovering in the background. And they had made up their own mind as to who the evaluation section would compose.
So this is evaluation of security or
No, this was an evaluation of the success of our missions in various places and to try to find out what happened specifically to the agents who'd got lost. Evaluate the fates the existence or otherwise of those missing agents, with a complete card index of all the agents of whom there was no trace. And my job was to evaluate what happened to them in concentration camps, Gefangenlager, all sorts of detention places and all. And this is when I was raking, this is why I was raking through records. We did get 22 of our men in Mauthausen, our agents in Mauthausen, who disappeared. And these records were magnificently kept. Everything was noted, colour of hair, colour of eyes, teeth, distinguishing marks, everything was down there, weight, everything. And then, in the case of our 22, after Flucht erschossen, or in inner und inner verschwunden, or tot. And usually there was an illness against tot, but that didn't mean anything.
So your job was not, in fact, to investigate the perpetrators of any war crime activity, but merely to find out the fate of...
Yes. I had nothing at that time to do with war crimes at all. I never did. I was only involved in war crimes when Vera came out and wanted to inadvertently mention that she was going to interview through Sommerhoff, Kindle and Seeren. And I said, where are you from? Oh, I don't know. He said, Einhausen. Well, what is his address? I don't know his address is. She knew nothing. And I went to the information office. They weren't sure where Sommerhoff was. Went to CMP. And I said, okay, he's just around the corner here. Just fortuitous, isn't it? I went to CMP. But that was Vera's introduction to war crimes, but she was conniving behind the scenes all along to get this job. And she did it very well. She did a good job for war crimes. And certainly for our agents and their families.
But whereas Vera's focus was exclusively F, not even RF, yours was a broader base, is that correct?
Vera took a full card index with her of agents of other country sections.
Oh, did she?
Yes. Valerie Gibson found that out for me. That Vera had a full card index of agents of other country sections, apart from F section. She had a complete card index. What she did, I don't know, but she had a complete card index. According to, there's a note there from Valerie Gibson saying that she just discovered that Vera had compiled a card index of other country section agents, missing agents.
That's interesting. I mean, because although the papers of hers that we have at the museum chronicle the fact that she is coming across RF section people, Dutch section people, her focus is entirely F.
She was steeped in F.
I think because of the close personal connection that she had with them in terms of perhaps being their conducting officer, perhaps being
cover story,
looking after, yes, the, keeping, being the point of contact with many of the families.
Yes, indeed. Seeing them off on their last journey to Tempsford and others.
Yeah. So there is it was a very personal thing, but it's interesting that your remit was much broader.
Well, we were all missing agents, irrespective of country section. We had our cardex. And we were looking for anybody and everybody, even including that wee Hungarian chap I found in May 1945, Augustan. And in those two Italian women, whom we just discovered in a smaller camp in southern Germany, but they had been uncovered 2 days before by the Americans. And they'd given them transportation back to Italy. But I got the names and the details and sent them back to London.
Did you interrogate... I'll try and structure this. When you were given this task, did they define any modus operandi for you, or was that left to yourself?
No. Off you go, chap. We did have a complete establishment set up. of transport and everything else, all carefully detailed and established. And then along came the sixth section with the political mission, and that hung fire, and Wenner just said, no, not two missions to Germany, one will have to do. And we went out there and we had literally no transport.
So that's with you and your assistant are grafted onto ME-42, mm-hmm. headed by
Van Marwijk. ME-42 hardly existed. They had nothing either. They got no. They had one 1,500-weight truck. Transport system was in a mess. I was given the job of organising transport. You'll see in that diary, I'm constantly criticised for running after motor cars. I had to run after motor cars because we didn't have any transport. It wasn't easy to find transport.
Sorry.
No, we're constantly in trouble with punctures too.
I read that too. I would imagine, though, that lack of backup for you must have inhibited your ability to do your primary task, which was to
this. Of course, it was almost impossible. Very difficult indeed, because we just didn't have the facilities. And we didn't have the facilities even to accomplish what Vine was supposed to be doing. We didn't have anything. The two things we had. We had an excellent Sergeant Darvis, who came from Aberdeenshire, and he was on a mission and brought back a nice lad. He was a brilliant man who could do everything. He was a gamekeeper by profession, and nothing he couldn't do. And he became my man Friday, and also with another corporal, Bedford, who had been with the Lancashire Speed Police, and he was a gen man on motor cars. And between Bedford and Tarvis, who was quite a good mechanic, I did manage to organise a really good transport system, because I'd done it in Valais, and I did have my own mechanical background knowledge, you see. I mean, I could take the car to bits and put it back again. But there was nothing. X section sent them out with a 1,500-weight truck, and I think with two trucks, actually, and a small PU.
Was your task and that of Van Marwijk intertwined, enmeshed in any way, or were you on parallel courses?
No, we didn't mesh. We never were meant to mesh at all. He was purely looking after his own particular side. We all messed together, yes. We had a very happy time together, very happy time together. But they were not concerned with my mission, and I wasn't concerned with theirs. And then, of course, later on, there was this definite urge to merge with C. It was Robin Brooke. And I don't know if I told you, but I had occasion, one of my last trips back, I had to come back here very urgently, and I managed to get priority one. And I had to get that signed by a brigadier. I went across to Robin Brooke. I said, will you sign this, sir? I'm urgently wanted back. This was getting on towards Christmas time. Oh, he said, you know, it's awfully difficult to sign these things at the time of Christmas because so many folks are swanning around. I said, are you suggesting that the Commodore Boyle is wanting me to swan around? He said, this is urgent business. I'm instructed to get back by hook or crook, and I managed to get priority one. Will you please sign? Well, he said, I find it difficult, you know, to think of it this time of year. So pulled it back and I said, never mind, sir, I'll get it signed elsewhere. I didn't like Robin Brooke. He was conniving against our back in all sorts of ways.
Because he did, for a period, join SIS, as I recall. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you feel that there is this period during the wind down of SOE is also...
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, it was openly talked about. In Saltzuflen. I mean, the ME-42 German side openly talked about this coming merger. It was quite clear it was in the wind. It didn't affect me because I had nothing to do with it. I was sitting on the sidelines as little Bo Peep, if you like. But they were all having to consider this merger because it was fomented by Robin Brooke. And the Jaws and the Club, well, Hugh Hunt had gone by this time, back home. But they were all involved in this looking to the future for themselves. And one law came up, of course, from 30 Corps. And he took over after Van left, I gather.
Going back to your task, which is the evaluation one of